Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. In response to these unusual and rapidly changing times, we will be airing Local Talk 5 days a week in the next few weeks to keep up with bringing you important information locally and to strengthen community ties, keeping us connected while separate physically. I am Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts, here with...
Ann Kinzel. Thanks for listening in. At KHOI, we're practicing physical distance while connecting community as best we can with information and social support. Today, I'm joining you with Zoom technology as our guest, so that's why we may sound a little odd. Ross Wilburn is here to get things started. Later, we'll be joined by Ames Public Relations Officer Susan Guiazda and Rich Higgins, Ames's fire chief and head of the city's emergency response team.
We'll also meet another candidate for the U.S. Senate seat, Cal Woods, and at the end of the hour, Anna Banana returns with her heart-to-heart messages. So stay with us. Lots to come.
Ross Wilburn is Iowa House District Representative for Ames's District 46, covering ISU and West Ames. Ross, thanks for coming again on Local Talk. We had you earlier.
Absolutely.
For starters, please tell us what Governor Reynolds relayed in her latest briefing.
And before I do that, just a quick reminder to wash your hands for 20 seconds or longer and practice the social distancing like we're doing here and try and keep the group sizes 10 people or less. The governor did announce that the president did approve the presidential major disaster declaration, which will help with us with our response and a lot of things that people have been wondering whether or not would be covered. We can get some assistance with. I won't get into the details of the different types of federal disaster relief or declarations, but essentially it empowers the executive of different levels of government, whether that's at the state level, the governor, the city level, the mayor, the county level, the chair of the county supervisors, and whether it's for access to funds. We're kind of used to with tornadoes and floods and earthquakes, not here necessarily, but for evacuations and controlled access to areas. But in this case, it releases funding, and it also helps some funding that goes directly to individuals. So it will help with unemployment insurance. It'll help with business grants and loans. And so it really will enable the governor to supplement some of the emergency funding and processes that have been in place here in Iowa.
How are our local small businesses, what's the best way for them to get information about this?
If you are a small business, you should go to a webpage, www.iowabusinessrecovery.com. And Iowa is spelled out. I'll say that again, iowabusinessrecovery.com. And that's got information on loans, on grants, on taxes, some deferrals, that type of thing, some other important information. So loans for small businesses and nonprofits are available through that. The Iowa Economic Development Authority has transferred $2.4 million to the Community Development Block Grant Program. So again, that will help with certain types of business. With the Community Development Block Grant, that's only for communities of less than $50,000 people. Larger cities can receive their own CDBG money from the federal government, and Ames is one of the cities that can receive it on their own. They don't have to go through the Iowa Economic Development Program.
Some of the smaller cities in our county can do that. So what else did Governor Reynolds highlight in her briefing? Anything important to share?
She did mention that 42 members of the Iowa National Guard have been activated, and they have been involved with transportation of the personal protective equipment to 5 counties. In Iowa. That's helpful for some of our healthcare providers out there. She also mentioned, actually slightly different, state legislators. Some of us were involved in a briefing yesterday with the Iowa Economic Development Authority Director and the Iowa Finance Authority Director. And related to employment, in this case unemployment, they are processing 20,000 calls a day. 20,000 calls a day for requests for unemployment and information. They've got 250 workers there, so that's about 2,500 calls per hour. So each one of them is handling about 10 cases per hour, and that's quite a load. So, you know, it's important if you're facing the decision about unemployment with you and your employer to go to the webpage, to call after you go to the webpage, because they've got frequently asked questions under Iowa Workforce Development.
Ross, that says that a lot of people are being laid off, right?
A lot of people are looking at being laid off. Yes,
that's a lot
absolutely.
Of calls.
Try to be patient because of that call volume, but it really does help if you go to Iowa Workforce Development Unemployment webpage to look for some basic information there, and that will help others be able to get access to help and support that way.
That's really good information, Ross. It shows us that even in the toughest of times, we can, as humans, can gear ourselves up. Did Governor Reynolds talk about any other things about the capacity of the state to respond to this? We need some good news. Anything you can fill us in on there?
From the figures that she's been looking at, the data that she's been looking at, she feels that, in general, Iowans are responding to some of the requests to limit your social interaction, to limit the trips to the grocery store, to the gas station, to the pharmacies, and to team up. You know, if you got a friend or neighbor, if you know that you're going to be going to the grocery store while practicing social distance, ask them, can you help make a trip just to reduce the number of people? She said she feels positive that Iowans are responding, because keep in mind, she did not mandate the stay-in, the stay-at-home policy, but she feels that there's good compliance. I don't know what metric she's looking at that, but I also had trouble on Facebook seeing the entire entire press conference, so that I wasn't able to see.
There are questions about whether Iowa will follow in the trend towards lockdowns. Did she mention that at all?
She said she does not believe we are on that path. I don't believe she's taken it off the table, but if she feels if Iowans continue to help mitigate this voluntarily, then that won't be necessary. I guess she feels that for all practical purposes, the informal stay-at-home is in place and is working.
One number that I did hear about her press conference that gave me pause and definitely reinforced my ideas about safe physical distancing is that there are less than 300 ventilators in the state of Iowa. And yep. We know that people who become seriously ill need a ventilator to hopefully, not always, but hopefully stay alive. So that's something that each one of us can kind of little fact there, put in the back of our mind. And by practicing our safe distancing, we might make a ventilator available for somebody else or even ourselves.
Absolutely. She said 280 ventilators. And just looking ahead and looking forward, before we were on the air, we were talking about some medical professions. We need people to get into medical professions, and in this case, respiratory therapists, so that they can help operate that.
Absolutely. Now, can you tell us a little bit? This is kind of a little bit of a nerdy subject, but maybe it would help us understand better what's going on. There's a chain of command at the state to deal with these kind of situations. Not that we've ever dealt with one like this before, but what's that chain? Can you tell us a little bit about that chain of command?
I can tell you what I know. Basically,
sure.
the chief executive, the governor, is in charge of the emergency response, and the legislature before we suspended, we gave her some additional authority. We gave her some additional spending authority, emergency, so she can spend money, she can borrow money based on the existing budget, and through her department heads is how she puts this response into place. For a lot of business stuff, it's the Iowa Economic Development Authority. The Iowa Finance Authority handles some of the tax issues that are coming up. The National Guard, the State Patrol, all of those department heads are busy. Even Department of Education, giving the suggestions out to the school districts about what they should be doing during this situation. So, and now that the federal major disaster declaration went into place, she and her department head, through her department heads, will realign some of the funds, which reminds me, if you are an individual who was turned down for unemployment or business that you didn't qualify before, now that the federal disaster has gone into place, go back to those websites, take a look to see if you might now qualify or if there was some new funding that was released. In fact, part of the financial support that will be going to folks, just the unemployment itself is going to be supplemented because of that.
So, Ross, just to be clear on this issue of chain of command, as I understand it, and tell me if this is correct, when the U.S. president says that we're in a state of emergency, then the governor of each state becomes, in a sense, the commander-in-chief of that state and is essentially the decision-maker for what happens next and funded by the legislature. Did I get that correct?
That's a good analogy, and the governor still has to operate within law, but if the governor is empowered to respond to all things related to this crisis.
The governors have to follow edicts brought down by the president in the president's lane.
Yes.
The U.S. Constitution reserves the power for life, health, and safety provisions to the governors. So a lot of people have asked, could you have a federal lockdown? No, you couldn't. The governors basically control the four corners of their states. Federal government's role is more limited to, they could do things with interstate commerce, but they couldn't stop commerce within a state, for example.
Okay, thank you. We're speaking with Ross Wilburn, who's Iowa House Representative for District 46, West Ames and Iowa State University. Ross, any last words?
Just a couple things. There, for folks who are looking at being laid off or folks who are looking for work, there are employers who are looking to hire workers right now. Development has those jobs listed on their website. If you're a small business with fewer than 50 employees, you can defer your unemployment taxes. And so far, 30 businesses have requested a deferment. So I know it can be frustrating looking at web pages, but please try and do those. And when you can't get to your answer, you know, that's when you make a call. And these applications are available online.
Ross, repeat that about deferring unemployment.
Small businesses with fewer than 50 employees can defer their unemployment taxes.
Thank you. Thank you, Ross. Any last words? Thank you for joining us.
You bet. And just, again, just a reminder for let's take care of others by taking care of ourselves, making sure that we're not getting we can only get through this together. And programs like this with people listening and you all doing what you're doing can help us mitigate the effects of this. So thanks again for the opportunity.
Thank you, Ross Wilburn, and thank you for being together with us. We really appreciate it. We'll be back with you next week, right?
Yep, sounds good.
Okay.
Just a quick apologies. Representative Rob Bacon was not feeling well. He's on the recovery, but he's got a pretty bad cough, and he would have been hoarse on the line. So just want to thank him for being willing to come in today, but I'm the backup.
Okay. Well, we'll see you again soon. This is Local Talk on KHY. I'm Ursula Rudenberg here with Ann Kinzel, who's co-hosting via Zoom. Thank you for listening in. Switching gears a bit, there is still an election pending for the U.S. Senate. There is still life beyond COVID-19. Cal Halliburton, our candidate reporter, spoke with Cal Woods, who is hoping to be the contender against Joni Ernst. He's currently running for the Democratic seat. He was interviewed recently, and let's see what they had to say.
Mr. Cal Woods. Mr. Woods is seeking the Democratic Party nomination as a candidate for the United States Senate for Iowa. Cal Woods grew up on an eastern Iowa farm near Mount Vernon. Following graduation, he served in the Navy on board the USS Chicago, attended Central College in Pella, graduated from the University of Iowa with a bachelor's degree in journalism, and got certified to teach at Iowa State University. While attending Iowa State, he worked at the Broiler Restaurant in Ames. He worked in Florida, Utah, and Colorado for several years and returned to Iowa in 1994. Cal was a reporter for WOI Television, a reporter and anchor for WHO Television, and a news director and reporter for KDSM Fox 17. He is currently a real estate agent serving Des Moines and surrounding communities. Cal has been a volunteer with Habitat for Humanity and has been involved in local politics and volunteered for Martin O'Malley for president in 2015. Cal, tell our listeners something about you that they'll not find on the internet.
My dad was a factory machinist at Universal Engineering in Cedar Rapids, a member of the machinist union for 35 years. He also raised Poland China hogs, and I understand hog farmers don't generally raise many Poland Chinas anymore. I think maybe they're going with a leaner breed or cross. And my mom worked at the Mount Vernon Bakery. Graduated from Mount Vernon High School and joined the Navy at 17, and that was a good experience for a young man who was just off the farm. Quite an eye-opening experience.
I assume you've been running around the state quite a bit and talking to people. And when you move around the state, what are their most frequent concerns?
There seems to be a feeling out there that folks are not happy with the president and a United States Senate that seems to be, in many cases, compliant, if not complicit, the way he's treated some of our best allies. He's been dismissive and disrespectful to many of our allies and cozied up to authoritarian leaders and dictators around the world, which I find very troubling. Then not to mention when refugees come to our shores and come to our borders seeking refuge from tyranny, violence, war in their own countries, we treat them like criminals. That is not who we are as Americans. That is not who we are as Iowans. And again, the United States Senate, led by Mitch McConnell and dutifully followed by Joni Ernst, have been troublingly quiet on those issues. And I think it's time that we stand up as Americans and redefine ourselves for the rest of the world and as much for ourselves. So this is not who we are as Americans. This is not who we are as Iowans. We need to reassert our values and our ideals and the reason that we are Americans.
Well, you mentioned immigration. That's one of the things that's kind of a hot button. How do you feel about the immigration?
You know, most of the people that come here, they're not going to be, a wall won't make any difference because they're coming here seeking asylum, which they're entitled to do, and apply for asylum, and maybe they'll qualify and maybe they won't. There are a lot of businesses in Iowa and throughout the country that are going wanting for many of the jobs that these folks could fill. So I think a couple of things, our immigration policy ought to, number one, reflect our values, and to the extent that they can supplement the workforce that we already have and fill necessary slots that are left vacant. We not only have an obligation to evaluate those claims for asylum, but also we have a need to welcome those folks into our country and to help our economy grow.
One of the issues that I hear about an awful lot is health care. Where do you come down on that?
You know, we didn't have to outlaw the horse and buggy 120 years ago. We just found more efficient ways to get around. There were new opportunities in a new economy. Likewise, I don't think we need to outlaw private health insurance companies from providing health insurance. We just outcompete them. Because right now, we spend about $11,000 per year per capita for healthcare in this country, which is about double what most of our friends in other and Western countries pay for healthcare. And part of the reason is because much of our healthcare goes through private health insurance companies who have to pay for marketing, advertising, salespeople, CEO salaries. That all comes out of the premiums that people pay, and whether it's your employer or yourself, and the co-pays, that comes out of the money that we put into healthcare. If we have a public option, which is what I'm in favor of, the marketing costs go away, the advertising costs go away, the CEO salaries go away. The woman who oversees Medicare and Medicaid in Washington makes about $165,000 a year. Compare that to David Wickman making $18 million a year. You tell me where the waste, fraud, and abuse is in that scenario. We'll still have some administrative costs, yes. But for $11,000 per person, we ought to be offering a top-notch class healthcare system for every man, woman, and child in America. And we can.
One of the things that seems to block our way of getting that done or making any other improvements is the amount of money in politics. How would you go about restricting that?
Well, first of all, we need to overturn Citizens United. It was a terrible distortion of how democracy ought to work to say that businesses can contribute unlimited amount of sums, that we can have dark money influencing campaigns, not to mention Russia and some other countries overseas who would like to thwart our democratic process. We need to overturn Citizens United. So let's all say a prayer for the notorious RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and hope that she stays with the Supreme Court for a long, long time. But I think that was a very bad decision on the part of the Supreme Court, and I think that can be overturned, number one. And we need to clean up our elections. And if we could get to a place where we have publicly funded elections, I think that would be outstanding, because money is not speech. If you have a ton of money, does that entitle you to a ton more speech? No, it does not. We all have because of the First Amendment, we all have the right to speak our minds, but we don't have the right to use a $1 billion megaphone to shut out other forms of speech because some candidate is getting tons of money from dark money sources. That's un-American. It's not democratic.
There are some other issues. I've got a whole string of them here. One of them has to do with the sale or possession of military weapons.
Second Amendment says a well-regulated militia. In any well-regulated militia, you would know who's in the militia and what arms they have, and I think that's not unreasonable. We had an assault weapons ban from, I believe, it was 1994 to 2004, and there's no reason we can't go back to that. And I was talking to a gun owner the other day who said, you know, a reasonable first step might be to limit the firepower, the number of rounds you can have in a magazine, There's no need to have dozens of rounds in a magazine unless your intent is to kill people.
Another issue that we have amongst the many is the national budget and national debt. And someplace along the way, people think we're going to need to do something to deal with that. And in order to do that, we're going to need to raise some money. Are there any taxes that you think that we could either increase or institute that might be helpful in that regard?
Absolutely. Back in 2017, our esteemed Secretary of the Treasury, Steve Mnuchin, told us if we pass the Trump tax cut of 2017, it'll stimulate the economy so much, it'll pay for itself, and it'll start to pay down the national debt. Since that tax cut was passed, we've increased our national debt by $1 trillion. We're somewhere up around $23 trillion. So what we essentially did was take out a $1 trillion loan to give millionaires and billionaires a tax cut, and we dump the responsibility on the next generation, the kids, if we don't tackle this national debt crisis now. And it's shameful to think that we'll just borrow money and we'll let the kids and grandkids pay it back. That's just wrong.
Another issue is women's right to our own body. Where do you come down on that issue?
I don't think it's any man's or any government's place to tell a woman what to do with her body. That's a decision that a woman needs to make with counsel from her family, her physician, and from her faith leader, period.
I'm going to skip around a lot here. Disclosure of candidate tax returns. Should that be a requirement for folks who are running for high public office?
Absolutely. They want to run for office, they need to be accountable for where their money's coming. Absolutely.
I guess that would apply to U.S. Senate candidates, too.
Certainly.
Is that appropriate?
Absolutely.
We could count on you disclosing your tax returns when you receive the nomination.
Absolutely. You absolutely may.
Okay, very good.
And I think this is the first time I'm on record, Cal, so you've got this.
I've got a scoop here, huh?
You've got a scoop, yes, sir.
Okay. Another thing that folks are trying to help people with is to increase the minimum wage. And if people talk about $15 minimum wage, frankly, I'm not sure $15 minimum wage is enough to make enough money in order to support a small family.
It's very challenging. And in this country, I think it's shameful. If somebody's willing to work 40, 45, 50 hours a week, they should be making enough that they don't still qualify for food stamps, housing assistance, home heating assistance, free and reduced school lunches for the kids, and Medicaid. Those businesses that are paying sub-living wages are just dumping their responsibility on the rest of the taxpayers. So if anybody's willing to work 40, 45, 50 hours a week, as many people are doing to try to make ends meet, they ought to be making a living wage. So we need to stop talking about a minimum wage and start talking about a living wage, compensating people fairly for their time and their effort and their work.
Have you read the Green New Deal resolution?
I have.
What do you think of that?
Well, I think it's sort of a wish list that encompasses more than just what we ought to do for our atmosphere, for our climate. It also encompasses a lot of economic measures that make a lot of sense. Again, it kind of touches on what we just talked about with regards to the minimum wage. If people are going to work, they ought to have the dignity of being able to make a fair living from their labors. So I would absolutely support a Green New Deal and the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act that would give individuals and businesses an incentive to minimize their carbon footprint and give them an incentive for doing things like reducing their use of carbon, for planting more trees. There's probably a million different solutions to our climate crisis, and it is a crisis, and we will probably need them all.
Well, you bring up a topic that is a hot one right now with the climate crisis. You know, what do we do about that?
As I say, there's probably a million different solutions. We're going to need them all. Right now, we're subsidizing the fossil fuel industry about $26 billion a year to poison our atmosphere with high levels of carbon dioxide. Let's phase out, not maybe cut it off immediately, but let's phase out the $26 billion a year that we're using to subsidize the fossil fuel industry and phase in more research and development on clean energy technology, primarily solar and wind and hydro. Iowa's a leader in wind. I think we're number one in the amount of energy that we derive from wind per square mile, and number two or number three overall in the energy that we get from wind turbines. And our friends up at Luther College in Decorah, they've got a solar field there, solar voltaic panels, about 250-kilowatt solar field up there that they use to power the Baker Student Housing Complex, about 100-student housing complex on campus. And sometimes, depending on the amount of sunshine and the amount of electricity they're using, they're actually feeding electricity back into the grid. These are common-sense solutions. And the nice thing about solar, you can do it on a very small scale. You can do it on a very large scale. And I think that's going to be a big source of our addressing our climate crisis. I'm involved with a group in Des Moines called Tree Des Moines, where we have offer classes on primarily geared toward homeowners on deciding what kind of trees to plant in their yard and or their farm or their acreage or whatever land they have. And then also we encourage folks to plant trees, and we offer trees and help folks in selecting trees. And last April on Earth Day, we did a tree planting at Cheatham Park in Des Moines. And I understand if we were to plant trees all around the world in fallow land, places where there is no row crops or no development plan, we could plant enough trees that would remove roughly 20% over time. Now, trees, you know, they don't grow real quickly, but over time, we could remove roughly 20% of the excess carbon in our atmosphere. And then if we incentivize farmers for just pennies a meal, plant cover crops, we can sequester a lot of that carbon in the soil, which is what we need to do in and on the soil. As I say, there's a million different solutions for our climate crisis, but we need to get serious about addressing those now. And right now we've got a president and many folks in the United States Senate, including our own junior senator, who are in denial about the responsibility that humans have for our climate crisis. At some point, I fear in the very near future, it's going to be the evidence will be irrefutable that we have a climate crisis and that humans are responsible, and therefore humans need to provide the solution.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners about yourself and your candidacy for U.S. Senate?
This is going to be a defining moment for America when we remind the rest of the world what kind of people we are, what kind of nation we are. This is going to be an opportunity. You know, Abe Lincoln said in his second inaugural, "With malice toward none, with charity toward all, let us bind the nation's wounds." And that's where we're at right now. This is the biggest divisiveness that we've had in this country since the Civil War, and our biggest opportunity to patch up some grievances. Some of my best friends are Republicans. Some of my very best friends are Trump people. We don't always agree. I don't always understand them, but I love them as much as ever. This is an opportunity for us to reunite this country, and we need that.
Well, thank you very much for being with us today, Cal. It's our pleasure to have been talking with Mr. Cal Woods, who is seeking the Democratic Party nomination as a candidate for the United States Senate for Iowa. Thank you again, Cal.
Cal, it's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Baby back, dressed in black, silver buttons all down her back. Hi-ho, tips her toes, she broke the needle and she dog. I'm just a walking the dog. If you don't know how to do it, I'll show you how to walk the dog.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and that is the Rolling Stones with Walking the Dog. That's dedicated to all of the dog walkers that we are seeing getting their exercise during social distancing in 2020. Hats off to you for getting out there with your dog and moving, giving us the nod from across the street. And thank you, Cal Halliburton, for your interview with Cal Woods. And just a reminder that the opinions expressed by politicians are not the necessarily opinions of KHOI. KHOI is a nonprofit organization, nonpartisan, but it is our duty to bring you the candidates and their opinions and their campaigns. So thank you, Cal, and thank you for listening. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts, together with Ann Kinzel, who is here via Zoom. Ann, you there?
Yeah, sure I am. Our next guests are Susan Guiazda, City of Ames Public Relations Officer. And thanks for coming back, Susan. And Rich Higgins, our Fire Chief It's great to be teaming up with the city this way to keep us all connected. So, Chief Higgins, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Ann?
I'm well. So in these interesting times where we're practicing physical distancing and social connectedness on the radio and other ways, what can you tell us about some activities that make sense from fire safety while people are practicing staying at home?
Absolutely. Now's a good time, as is any time, to practice fire safety. This is a good time to go ahead and get your smoke detectors down, take a look at them, change batteries out if you didn't do so during the time change that we had a few weeks ago. It's also a good idea, just like your house, your countertops, you have to dust those every so often. It's a good idea to dust your smoke detector. And you don't want to get your duster in there, but if you have a can of spray air, just like you'd use on your keyboard at home, spray a little bit of air in there just to kind of get any dust that's accumulated on the sensors out of there. For me, sometimes I just take it down and I blow on it just to get any dust out of the detector itself. And then obviously you want to get it installed back up there into the ceiling and hit the test button on all your smoke detectors. Make sure that they're interconnected and that they're all working. It's a great time to do that.
That's a great thing for people to do while they're home. And you're also the emergency response director for the city of Ames. Is that correct?
Well, it's more of a team approach right now. I'm helping work with the team. There's about four of us that have kind of taken on more of a unified command approach with this. And so we're working together to develop plans, contingency plans, and try to stay out ahead of the pandemic right now that we're dealing with.
So who are your teammates?
We got Police Chief Chuck Sykosh from the city manager's office. We have Assistant City Manager Brian Phillips. And then from our HR department, Bethany Jorgensen is part of our four-person team.
So in your role as emergency response guy with your team, can you tell us a little bit about some of the things that you're planning for or thinking about?
Absolutely. I can tell you a little bit about what we've done already and what we're hoping we don't have to do, but we're prepared to do. So right now we've changed our response calls to medicals a little bit. We work under the direction of Mary Greeley Medical Center. Dr. Flugrad is our medical director over there. And working with them very closely, we have pulled back from responding to Alpha and Bravo calls into the community.
What's that mean?
What are Alpha and Bravo calls?
Yep. So Alpha and Bravo calls are those general illness calls where somebody calls in. Most of them tend to take place at nursing homes where we are trying to limit our operations in anyway. And so Alpha and Bravos are those general illness calls where you call in, it's nothing emergent, they're low acuity. It's the, I don't feel so good today, or I've been battling a headache for a couple of weeks. People call 911 sometimes when they don't feel well. And so we've pulled back from those calls. Mary Greeley still responds. We are available to still respond. We monitor the radio, and some of those we're still going on. But for the most part, we've tried to pull back from that so that we're not, number one, bringing anything into nursing homes, and number two, we're not taking anything out of the nursing homes. So that's one of the things that we've done right now.
So Rich, let me ask you the obvious question. Two obvious questions. One is stupid and was probably not so stupid. Number one, if you have a fire, can you still call the fire department? Will they still come?
Well, absolutely. Yep. And so that's why we've changed a little bit. We've pulled back from those alpha low acuity calls so that we could stay focused on the one thing that our community can get from fire service. They can get EMS from Mary Greeley and from us. It's a tiered approach, even with PD, all three of us respond to medical calls, but fire calls, we're the only provider in our community. So we want to make sure that we have our people healthy and ready to go on those calls. So absolutely, you call 911, you're going to get us no matter what you call for.
Okay. Other question. If you think you have the virus and you're worried about that, should we call you?
No. The first number, if you are, it's not an emergency, the first number you should call if you think you are symptomatic is 210. They will get you connected, whether they'll help address any questions that you may have about COVID-19, help you work through some of your symptoms. And then they will get you connected to First Nurse or the nursing hotline over at Mary Greeley, depending on where you live, to help evaluate that further. Now, if it's an emergency, you can't breathe, you're having difficulty breathing, by all means, do not hesitate to call 911. We will respond. We still respond to difficulty breathing calls. That's not an Alpha or Bravo call. That's a different level call, and we're going to be there and make sure that you're okay and provide you with oxygen, help you breathe, do what we can to take care of you.
But Chief Higgins, we've heard a lot of talk about personal protective equipment for medical staff and others. How's that look for your fire department when you have to help respond or transport people or be involved in transportation of people to the hospital who would be suspected of having COVID-19 or COVID-19 symptoms?
Absolutely. So through the first part of that is through when somebody calls 911, our dispatchers have screening calls. They are screening questions. They're asking, have they traveled out of the state of Iowa? What symptoms do they have? And through those questions, we're able to get an alert ahead of time before we get to the address. So that way we know that if we need to put on additional PPE, we can do that. So when we get on scene, if it is a COVID alert, somebody that has all the symptoms of COVID's traveled out of the city, has been to a hot spot, we're going to go ahead and we're going to put on some extra precautions. We're going to put on an N95 mask. We're going to put on eye protection. And we may even put on a Tyvek suit. We currently don't have gowns, which is part of our PPE. We have to go to a almost fully encapsulating Tyvek suit that protects us if we were to be sneezed on. Just protects our clothes from that way we can throw away the Tyvek and not have to throw away uniforms or T-shirts.
Boy, we're sure learning new vocabulary these days. So PPE, I take that's personal protective equipment?
Yes, that is right.
Okay. And you guys feel you have an adequate supply of all that, huh?
We currently do. We are monitoring supplies daily. We were in communications with the state reporting those weekly. The state's kind of pulled back from that and says, hey, we don't need the inventory. Just let us know what you need through your local county emergency operations center. So we're working with Keith Morgan and his team over in Nevada at the Story County Emergency Operations Center to let them know what our needs are. And they've been great in responding.
Can I just jump in for a minute?
Yeah.
I just want to reiterate that, the city of Ames has an emergency operations protocol that we all have been operating under for years. And when we have emergencies, typically in the past, those have been floods, weather-related events, snowstorms, major accidents or incidents. We all operate under an incident command system, and we all understand our role. That expands out into the county. And I think Rich is one of our team leaders, is, you know, taking that structure and we're using that for a pandemic response. And when everybody is speaking the same vocabulary and everybody has been through the drill before, what we're finding is that the system works and we're able to respond. This system is a little different. The situation is different. And so the constantly evolving nature of it means that we're just meeting more frequently and there are more players at the table.
It's good to know that when we make plans, some of them actually work. That gives me real hope today. Back to you, Rich. We asked this question when we spoke to John Dunn, the head of the water department. How are you managing your personnel to ensure that all your firefighters are healthy and reporting for duty? All of us, when we went to school, saw things about the firemen that live at the firehouse and the firewomen that live at the firehouse. How does that work?
We're here 24/7. We have crews that live at the station. They work a 24-hour shift. They got here at 7 o'clock this morning, and they'll eat, sleep, live, respond to calls out of the station for the next 24 hours and leave tomorrow at 7 o'clock in the morning, and a new crew will come in. Some of the things we've done already in the station, or we've been doing for quite a while now, is every time a new crew comes in, the whole station gets washed down. Every time a vehicle goes out on a call, it's getting washed down, wiped down, making sure that we're not spreading or taking anything from one call to the next. This week, we'll also be starting, as soon as we can get our thermometers in. Believe it or not, it's hard to get a thermometer right now. And we need...
It is.
We have three different stations in Ames, and so we need to get a thermometer at each station. We're asking our crews to start self-monitoring when they're on duty 3 times during their shifts. So when they get here, we're asking them to take their temperature and check vitals. And about 7 o'clock in the evening, we'll ask them to do the same. Then before they leave in the morning, the next day, we're going to have them take their temperature. That way, we can hopefully stay ahead of anybody starting to get ill. And if we notice a trend that somebody's starting to run a fever, we're going to send them home immediately. That way, we can get them recovered, less likely for them to spread anything to their crew or to the customers that we're responding to. And we're encouraging people to do self-monitoring as well. I know I'm taking my temperature 3 times a day before I leave. As soon as I get up in the morning, I'm taking my temperature. when I get home in the evening, I take my temperature. And then if I'm home for lunch, I'll take my temperature as well. I want to make sure that I'm doing my part to not spread the virus. That way, if I'm starting to get sick, I can stay home, which we're encouraging everybody to do. If you don't feel well, stay home. If I was in the lotion industry right now, this is a good time because hopefully everybody has dry hands because we're washing them so much. That's one of the things we're encouraging our crews to do as well. As soon as you get here, wash your hands. They're doing it after calls. They've always done that. That's just proper body substance isolation, good practice there. But there's a lot of little things that we can do here. Unfortunately, we've had to stop. We've locked our doors on the fire stations. That doesn't mean we're closed. We're just not allowing anybody free access to come in and provide tours to the station. So we're working with Susan and her team and also with some of our Facebook experts here in the city to try to do some virtual tours for the people that want to come see the fire station that can't. So we're working on that, hoping to roll that out next week where we can pick a couple days and do kind of a social live feed where we can take people around the fire station, ask questions in real time in between those calls and give them a tour so they can see what's happening at the fire station still.
I'm going to stay tuned for that because I've never seen the inside of a fire station.
I'd love to show you. It's a beautiful place. It is home.
Speaking of the inside of the fire station, we're speaking with Rich Higgins, who's the Ames Fire Chief and also head of the emergency response team. Rich, how is the morale at the fire station? How are people doing? How are you doing in terms of dealing with the stress of all this preparation and anticipation?
You know, I'm really proud of our crews. We have great people working at the fire department, working for the city, and they're resilient. Not once have they said, hey, chief, we're nervous about responding to these calls or we need this or that. It's always been, hey, chief, you let us know what we can do to help or, hey, here's this idea on how we can do outreach. In fact, I just got some emails from one of the crews yesterday that was asking about, hey, can we use the ladder truck to maybe get some signs posted to some of the people in nursing homes and high rises that we want? How do we reach out to them with some different ideas? So our crews have really stepped up to the plate. They're used to responding to calls. We do exposure control every day. This is not new to us. It is a new crisis that we're dealing with, but I just can't say enough about how thankful I am for our crews and their dedication to this community and to our department. They've really stepped up during this critical time in our community.
That's fantastic to hear.
Yeah, we really appreciate that.
I just want to piggyback quickly on what Rich said. We are looking for different ways to do outreach to our citizens. So if people have ideas on how they are getting their information now, you know, contact us. Let us know how we can provide outreach to them, how they want to receive information, because this is a new world and we are willing to do things differently. So just let us know.
Thank you so much. And that's Susan Guiazda, City of Ames Public Relations Officer. And she's here with Rich Higgins via Zoom, the Ames Fire Chief. Before you head out, last words?
I just want to continue to encourage everybody to take care of each other. Right now, it's as emotions are high as we respond to sometimes things we don't always know. The future is unpredictable. If we can stay positive and continue to take care of each other and smile, and just because we can't shake hands doesn't mean we can't smile and say hi to people. I think that's going to go a long ways. If we can keep a positive attitude about this, a positive outlook, I think that's going to go a long ways. And we, like Susan said, we want to let us know what we can do to help make a difference. We're trying to find unique ways to reach out to the community and encourage them. We know it's tough being stuck in your home and not being able to get out. We're meant to be social. So to not be able to do that is hard. So if we can all do our part, wash our hands, stay home if you don't feel good, and take care of each other, we're going to get through this together. We're going to be much more stronger for that.
Thank you. And again, the number is 211 if you have questions about COVID-19 related symptoms, right?
Yes, thank you.
If you need to reach out to City of Ames, we are here. We are taking your phone calls. We are responding to your emails. Again, cityofames.org is a great place to start. We actually have a dedicated hotline. If you don't know where to start, call us. The hotline will be answered during business hours, 515-239-5670. We are on social platforms. We have our cable television station, but we are always looking for new ways to do outreach. So we're here. We're ready to respond, and we'd love to reach out to you in other ways.
Thank you so much, Susan. See you tomorrow, right?
Absolutely. We'll be here.
Okay. Thank you so much to both of you for helping us with public information and the good word about the determination of the Ames Fire Department. It's really, really great to hear that. We have a few more minutes left. Okay, Anna Banana, you are back.
I am. Thank you so much. I just want to thank so much the KHOI family and to you, Ursula, for all that you do to build support and nurture community through communication.
And to Ann Kinzel.
This opportunity to be Anna Banana, the host of this segment, KHOI's Heart to Heart Messages. So, Ursula, you and I met because of where I work. And I work in the Collegiate United Methodist Church's Annex Building. And there's so many reasons why I love where my work is located, including that I'm very in close proximity to the Dunkin' Donuts, but that's another story. but in that building is the headquarters of Friendship Arc, Arc of Story County, and the Iowa ABLE Foundation. And so all three of our organizations have a mission to serve individuals with disabilities. We are intentional about collaborating and communicating to find ways to help each other out for the purpose of making a difference in our community for those we serve. And so I just love being in that space. And as a newcomer to Ames, both Friendship Arc Executive Director and Arc of Story County Executive Director have been so kind and so welcoming. So today's heart-to-heart messages come from both the Executive Director of Friendship Arc and Arc of Story County. Friendship Arc's Executive Director is Jennifer Ellis. And let me tell you why I love Jennifer. Jennifer possesses all the characteristics of a true servant leader, including building a sense of community within her organization, but she also extends it outside. So I was brand new to the organization, and she invited me to their organization's Christmas party, and I ate very well. So she is a very kind, caring, and generous visionary leader. So she recently and her family have traveled out of the country, and so she has had to be self-quarantining herself and her family to protect her team and core members. And so this is the heart-to-heart message that she sent for me to share. To the Friendship Arc family, I miss seeing the smiling faces of our core members, staff, and family members, but I'm hoping and looking forward to a time in the near future when I will get to see those smiles again soon. If you are like me and missing those smiles, check out our Facebook page at Friendship Arc Homes and Community Services. We are posting pictures from activities happening in our homes as we can. May you all be healthy and well. So thank you, Jennifer, for this message, and to the Friendship Arc team for all your work to celebrate the uniqueness of adults with intellectual disabilities by providing homes and community services and helping those core members reach their fullest potential through faith, family, and friendship. Now, you're not supposed to have friendships. I don't have children or favorites. And I know you're not supposed to have a favorite. But there is one Friendship core member that I absolutely adore. She loves hot cocoa. She wears Jessica Simpson perfume. And she wears her hair in the most cutest style. I love her. And every time I see her, she calls me Anna Banana, which I just love. So, I hope that you're hearing this message to my favorite core member, and Anna Banana is thinking about you and miss seeing you in the halls of our building. And you can learn more about Friendship Arc at www.friendshiparc.org. So the second and final heart-to-heart message today comes from Tricia Crane. She's the executive director of the Arc of Story County, and she's upstairs. She's in the upstairs office. Now, if you meet Tricia and if you know her, you'll never, ever forget the woman. She'll make you laugh till your sides split, and her uncensored commentary will probably take you off guard. And she will more than likely include a swear word in a sentence that will function as a noun, adjective, and adverb all at once. And so she makes me laugh. And while your mouth might hang wide open from shock what comes out of her mouth, the woman has a heart of gold. And she cares deeply about making a difference for others. So if you ask her about Project Search, which is one of her programs, she just lights up. You can tell she really cares about that partnership between the Arc of Story County and Iowa State University. She invited me to attend one of the open houses, and I just was so impressed with the program and its participants. So Tricia, she sent this heart-to-heart message, and I didn't have to censor out any words, no swear words in this, so you don't have to worry about pushing the button, Ursula or Pat or Mike. So this is Trisha's message. The Arc of Story County would like to give a shout out to our wonderful self-advocates and Special Olympic athletes. Though we aren't able to get together right now, we look forward to the summer when we can all socialize, bond, and plan future activities. Keep the faith. So thank you, Trisha, for your dedication to providing support and advocacy for families to persons with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And you can learn more about their programs at thearcstory.org. So these heart-to-heart messages come from two talented, passionate, compassionate, and lovely community leaders who work for your local nonprofit organizations in the Annex building. So if you'd like to respond to any of these messages, I invite you to text me at AnnaBanana at 515-809-0077. Or if you would like to have a heart-to-heart message read on air by me, Anna Banana, text me at 515-809-0077.
Anna, repeat those numbers.
Yeah, sure. It's 515-809-0077. And so I will get that text and look at it and read it on air. So we hope that our heart-to-heart messages inspire you to connect to our community. And from the bottom of our hearts, we thank you for listening and send our love to each of you.
Thank you, Anna. And we will hear from you again soon. Thank you so much for all you are doing, bringing us heart-to-heart with your messages. We really appreciate it. You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We've been your hosts, Ann Kinzel and Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening in. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI. And also remember that you can hear the recording of the show later at our website, khoifm.org. And that website has been a little bit dormant recently, but it is coming back to life. Thank you to Mr. Paul Hertz, who is spending his time in physical separation updating our website. So thank you, Paul. And we hope to have our shows back on our homepage as soon as possible. And also remember that KHOI is streaming live at KHOIFM.
Ursula, if people have topics that they want us to cover, is there any way that they can let us know?
That's a great question. Yes, please contact us at khoiradio@gmail.com. khoiradio@gmail.com. Please give us your feedback, topics you'd like to cover. Really appreciate that. We're very lucky to have city officials and representatives working with us, trying to bring us all the information that possibly would be important during this time. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kay Chelly. We also heard Walkin' the Dog by the Rolling Stones. And Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. So if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. You can join the Local Talk team by telephone and Zoom. Thank you to those of you who have joined us recently during this crisis, including you, Anne. It's great to be working with you. Really appreciate.
Thanks. I'm learning on the fly. Training me on the fly.
You want to take us out, Anne?
Sure. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.